We're immersed in pop culture these days, and we can joke about the way it's taking over our lives. But maybe it's no joke. Contributing editor Neil Milner looks at a new study that suggests that the bombardment of so-called synthetic experiences can not only change our opinions, it can even blur the line between fact and fiction. Is the pop culture effect that much stronger these days, or are we just more aware of it?
I don't know if it didn't influence us or if we didn't understand how it influenced us, but it certainly has taken on a different... There's all kinds of directions you can go to answer that question. The fact that there's more celebrity now, there's more opportunities for it. But what this study does is to look at how the brain absorbs information, both true information and fictional information. And so pop culture becomes one of the kind of sources of meaning that goes into the brain. So what they find is that, not surprisingly, pop culture influences us, just as when you and I were younger, Bob Dylan's music influenced us. But this is a different kind of process entirely. What they really say is, remember how much we learn about the world vicariously. You know, most of what we know about China or what we know about almost anything political is not from our firsthand experiences. It comes through other sources. And one of the many sources is fiction, for example, or music that has important words in it. And the important contribution that they make, it may not be all surprising for people who know something about the brain, is that if you think about it, good stories, good fictional stories influence people. And the best fiction is called transformative. And what's really happening when people look at information, including fiction, whatever comes into their brain, the brain absorbs it as a source of information. And we not only don't we make the distinction between fact and fiction, that is, between something you get from a novel, a spy novel, whatever novel, and something you get from, say, someone like me who is quoting some kind of facts, the brain doesn't make that distinction at all. In fact, the brain is predisposed to accept the fiction before it accepts other kinds of things. And so what you have then is that this information comes in, and we make a distinction between facts and fiction, between nonfiction and fiction, real life and fictional life. In our heads, in our brains, we don't make that distinction at all. The brain immediately suspends disbelief. And this, to me, is helps to explain a lot of stuff. The less you know about a subject, the more likely you are to believe the fictional explanation of it. This is not a conspiracy. It's not tricky. It's simply how we absorb information and what we do with it. So it creates a very different kind of world in our heads.
If you know nothing about a subject, there's all kinds of space to be filled in your brain.
Well, that's right.
And the first thing that fills the space is welcomed and accepted as fact, is what you're saying.
That's right. And also tends to stay there even as facts come in, if it's fictional. And that makes the process of learning and the process of how we respond to things very different. This is not, you know, you don't want to see this as an aberration, as something that just a few people do. This is how you do things. And if you try to teach people what's more factual, you have to work very hard at it to overcome this.
Well, that whole mechanism kind of implies that it would be pretty easy to manipulate the public with fiction.
Well, I guess that's right. There's this kind of dramatic view that through propaganda and so on, you can manipulate the public. And certainly we know enough about propaganda that that's true. But this in some ways is more common and more insidious, certainly less conspiratorial and organized. It simply says that information out there through our brain is not, we don't distinguish it in terms of fact or fiction or real or fake, which to me means that the whole issue about fake news versus real news is, first of all, it's an unrealistic term. It doesn't say anything. It's essentially a way to weaponize the media, but doesn't explain anything. The more important thing to understand is how all of us make these distinctions between real and not real, and how often that happens, how common that happens in the absence of self-conscious manipulation. Without a propaganda machine, our heads do it for us.
It's often been said, or it's being said more and more often. I want to go back to the 1930s when the Germany's National Socialist Party really made a study of how the mind works, how the public mind works. And the head of the Nazi propaganda machine, Joseph Goebbels, came up with the notion of the big lie.
Yes.
The lie that's uttered loudly enough and often enough becomes fact. And do you see that kind of mechanism? I mean, I'm talking just about the very general mechanism of how to move large numbers of people. Do you see that alive today in some ways?
Well, I think that's alive today in lots of places. It's alive today in closed systems. North Korea certainly operates on the basis, if you have a closed information system and you keep out social media and outside thing, it's possible to do. I think so. You still have that. In authoritarian regimes, it's not surprising that part of what you try to do is to control the process of information. China does it to some extent also because you then can get your own definition of reality there. And so I think while the big lie is certainly a dramatic way of doing it, and it certainly works and well, or is tried at least, in well-oiled political machines of the authoritarian nature, this is about something that is a bit different from that. It's about the process of how we handle everything. You know, all of these things. If you're reading a book by Tom Clancy, for example, and you begin to see that as the way of your world, it's not because of a big lie. Or one of the examples I have friends who will say they love The House of Cards because it really shows how politics works. Well,
that's scary.
It is scary, but because they're predisposed to think about it that way, and because that's it's a very compelling show with a good script, that becomes the dominant way. And the less that you know about how government works, the more likely you are to accept that sort of thing.
You know, in the case of that show, I've had to laugh out loud at some of the most wildly implausible stuff.
It's a show about evil. It's not a show about politics.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
People, I mean, you know, if you think about how people, and I should say that these people that I'm talking to, my friends, are certainly not the black helicopter paranoid sort of stuff. They're good liberals, good anti-Trump liberals who say to me, boy, that show really is, you know, but the point is that you get so much information that way, and though you think you're making distinctions in a rational sort of way, in your mind, this information all gets lumped together. And like the old song, the music comes out here. You don't know what the music is really going to be.
Well, you know, that particular show is presented with great confidence, right?
It's sure.
With great assurance. They, even when they have fake news reports, they'll have Wolf Blitzer doing it, you know. So they take everything they can to put a fictional story in a real-world identifiable context. And I think that must be part of what draws us.
Sure. I mean, if you think about it, it's like any good transformative piece of fiction. It's trying to get you to suspend your disbelief, to see this as real. Well, what these guys that did the research here, and this is really based on a whole bunch of research in psychology and in brain science that's been going on for at least the last 40 years for sure. What they're trying to say is that you're going to be predisposed to accept this kind of information, that there's just a predisposition to take it in. By the way, the ultimate thing that makes this, what it makes it hard for people like me as analysts is that what they argue is that, you know, you analysts always try to say, this is how something is, and it's that way because of the following facts, and you present it in a kind of factual manner. They say, well, if it's true that so much information comes through other forms, through other media, that comes through narratives rather than facts, then maybe you have to rethink how to do these sorts of things. Maybe if I had thought about it more, I wouldn't have been so confident publicly that Trump was going to lose. And so that's an interesting, I mean, it has some very interesting implications for public intellectuals about how you get across ideas to people and how you see them. Now, just one other thing. There clearly is some difference between truth and non-truth. You know, science deniers are on the wrong foot. No one is saying that all facts are equal. But it does help to explain why some people who are relatively well-educated but are conservative, for example, don't believe very much about climate, don't worry very much about climate change, because there's other things going on. There's other sources of information they have. And a lot of this, by the way, comes from science fiction, which people begin to believe. And if you ever read science fiction, a lot of that stuff makes you say, boy, maybe the world is like this.
Well, what it tells you is that if something is presented credibly with the air of confidence, you might just go for it.
Well, sure. Well, or if not confidence, if it's presented compellingly. Think of storytellers, yeah, whether they're formal or not. Think of the person in your family who could get everybody laughing or everybody sad just by telling family stories. After a while, you have no idea whether they're true in an objective sense, and you don't care very much.
Political analyst Neil Milner is the contributing editor of our biweekly segment, The Long View. You can find links to the full study on how pop culture affects politics on the conversation page at hawaiipublicradio.org.